The Imitation of Christ, Part 10, Book 2, the 9th chapter, Wanting No Share in Comfort. It is not hard to spurn human consolation when we have the divine. It is, however, a very great thing indeed to be able to live without either divine or human comforting, and for the honor of God, willingly to endure this exile of heart, not to seek oneself in anything, and to think nothing of one's own merit. Does it matter much if, at the coming of grace, you are cheerful and devout? This is an hour desired by all, for he whom the grace of God sustains travels easily enough. What wonder if he feel no burden when borne up by the Almighty, and led on by the Supreme Guide? For we are always glad to have something to comfort us, and only with difficulty does a man divest himself of self. The holy martyr Lawrence, with his priest, conquered the world, because he despised everything in it that seemed pleasing to him, and, for love of Christ, patiently suffered the great high priest of God, Sixtus, whom he loved dearly, to be taken from him. Thus, by his love for the Creator, he overcame the love of man, and chose, instead of human consolation, the good pleasure of God. So you too must learn to part with an intimate and much-needed friend for the love of God. Do not take it to heart when you are deserted by a friend, knowing that in the end we must all be parted from one another. A man must fight long and bravely against himself before he learns to master himself fully and to direct all his affections toward God. When he trusts in himself, he easily takes to human consolation. The true lover of Christ, however, who sincerely pursues virtue, does not fall back upon consolations, nor seek such pleasures of sense, but prefers severe trials and hard labors for the sake of Christ. When, therefore, spiritual consolation is given by God, receive it gratefully, but understand that it is His gift, and not your meriting. Do not exult, do not be overjoyed, do not be presumptuous, but be the humbler for the gift, more careful and wary in all your actions. For this hour will pass, and temptation will come in its wake. When consolation is taken away, do not at once despair, but wait humbly and patiently for the heavenly visit, since God can restore to you more abundant solace. This is neither new nor strange to one who knows God's ways, for such change of fortune often visited the great saints and prophets of old. There was one who, when grace was with him, declared, "In my prosperity, I said, I shall never be moved." But when grace was taken away, he adds what he experienced in himself, "Thou didst hide thy face, and I was troubled." Meanwhile, he does not despair. Rather, he prays more earnestly to the Lord, saying, "To thee, O God, Lord, will I cry, and I will make supplication to my God." At length he receives the fruit of his prayer, and testifying that he was heard, says, "The Lord hath heard, and hath had mercy on me. The Lord became my helper." And how was he helped? "Thou hast turned," he says, "my mourning into joy, and hast surrounded me with gladness." If this is the case with great saints, we who are weak and poor ought not to despair because we are fervent at times and at other times cold, for the Spirit comes and goes according to His will. Of this the blessed Job declared, "Thou visitest him early in the morning, and thou provest him suddenly." In what can I hope, then, or in whom ought I to trust, save only in the great mercy of God and the hope of heavenly grace? For though I have with me good men, devout brethren, faithful friends, holy books, beautiful treatises, sweet songs and hymns, all these help and please me but little when I am abandoned by grace and left to my poverty. At such times, there is no better remedy than patience and resignation of self to the will of God. I never met a man so religious and devout that he has not experienced at some time a withdrawal of grace and felt a lessening of fervor. No saint was so sublimely rapt and enlightened as not to be tempted before and after. He indeed is not worthy of the sublime contemplation of God who has not been tried by some tribulation for the sake of God. For temptation is usually the sign preceding the consolation which is to follow, and heavenly consolation is promised to all those proved by temptation. To him that overcometh, says Christ, I will give to eat of the tree of life. Divine consolation, then, is given in order to make a man braver in enduring adversity, and temptation follows in order that he may not pride himself on the good he has done. The devil does not sleep, nor is the flesh yet dead. Therefore, you must never cease your preparation for battle, because on the right and on the left are enemies who never rest. The 10th chapter, Appreciating God's Grace. Why do you look for rest when you were born to work? Resign yourself to patience rather than to comfort, to carrying your cross rather than to enjoyment. What man in the world, if he could always have them, would not readily accept consolation and spiritual joy, benefits which excel all earthly delights and pleasures of the body? The latter, indeed, are either vain or base, while spiritual joys, born of virtue and infused by God into pure minds, are alone truly pleasant and noble. Now, since the moment of temptation is always nigh, since false freedom of mind and overconfidence in self are serious obstacles to these visitations from heaven, a man can never enjoy them just as he wishes. God does well in giving the grace of consolation, but man does evil in not returning everything gratefully to God. Thus, the gifts of grace cannot flow in us when we are ungrateful to the giver, when we do not return them to the fountainhead. Grace is always given to him who is duly grateful, and what is wont to be given the humble will be taken away from the proud. I do not desire consolation that robs me of contrition, nor do I care for contemplation that leads to pride. For not all that is high is holy, nor is all that is sweet good, nor every desire pure, nor all that is dear to us pleasing to God. I accept willingly the grace whereby I become more humble and contrite, more willing to renounce self. The man who has been taught by the gift of grace and who learns by the lash of its withdrawal will never dare to attribute any good to himself, but rather admit his poverty and emptiness. Give to God what is God's, and ascribe to yourself what is yours. Give him thanks, then, for his grace, but place upon yourself alone the blame and the punishment your fault deserves. Always take the lowest place, and the highest will be given you, for the highest cannot exist apart from the lowest. The saints who are greatest before God are those who consider themselves the least, and the more humble they are within themselves, so much the more glorious they are. Since they do not desire vainglory, they are full of truth and heavenly glory. Being established and strengthened in God, they can by no means be proud. They attribute to God whatever good they have received. They seek no glory from each other, but only that which comes from God alone. They desire above all things that he be praised in themselves and in all his saints. That is their constant purpose. Be grateful, therefore, for the least gift, and you will be worthy to receive a greater. Consider the least gift as the greatest, the most contemptible as something special. And if you but look to the dignity of the giver, no gift will appear too small or worthless. Even though he give punishments and scourges, accept them, because he acts for our welfare in whatever he allows to befall us. He who desires to keep the grace of God ought to be grateful when it is given and patient when it is withdrawn. Let him pray that it return. Let him be cautious and humble, lest he lose it. End of part 10.